Hi, this is Paul Warne, and you're listening to the Rams Review Podcast.
This is the Rams Review Podcast. Discussions, insights, interviews, and analysis. All passion, all Derby County.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Rams Review Podcast. Corey along with you today. And today I'm joined by a very special guest, somebody who had a very successful loan spell with the Rams a few years ago, none other than Colt hero Sam Winnell. Sam, thanks for joining us on the podcast. How the heck are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. As soon as you said you wanted to have a chat, I was looking forward to it. So, yeah, all good. Thank you.
And Sam, before we get into talking about your time at Derby, I want to ask about you at the moment. As of the time that we're recording and chatting, you're currently unattached to any club. I'll just say in brackets, side note, whisper, wink, wink, Derby do need a striker, Sam. So I don't know, maybe call your agent, talk to Paul Warren. We'll see what happens there. So Sam, my first question to you is, you've played football for a very long time. And this is a summer where you don't have a club. You had a similar situation last season with Burton, but you kind of got picked up, you know, after a couple of weeks. What's it like for you seeing your friends, your mates, your teammates going out, kicking off, having a couple of weeks of the season, and yet you're kind of currently unattached? What's that like for you as a footballer?
Yeah, it's frustrating, as you can imagine, you know. I mean, like as you just said, I'm an experienced footballer now, you know. I'm 32, so I've kind of been around the block. I've seen everything it kind of has to offer. So then when you're not doing it, you do feel a little bit lost, if I'm going to be totally honest. And obviously, if I had the choice, you know, I'd be back playing now. It was tough to see the season start a couple of weeks ago and not to be involved and not to kind of have that buzz of the first game of the season and be involved in what would have been a new team, you know. So it is frustrating. It is hard, but you just have to keep yourself ticking over, keep fit. And just keep believing that, you know, eventually the phone will ring and an opportunity will arise that's the right one. I'm in a good headspace with it all. I feel as if I'm ready to go back and I'm ready to, you know, join a new team and stuff like that. It's just waiting for the right opportunity to arise, really. And I'm sure it will eventually.
How do you keep yourself fit then, Sam? Obviously, there's nothing better than match practice, right? Playing games, being in training with your teammates and things like that. And my assumption is you can do gym work on your own and things like that. But how do you maintain your fitness so that when that phone rings, that learning curve is not as steep, or that fitness curve is not as steep as what maybe people would expect it to be?
Yeah, you've kind of hit the nail on the head there. It is difficult. All I can really do is control what I can control, and that's by, you know, looking after myself, doing runs that I've done thousands of runs over the years. So I've got all the kind of runs that you could imagine under my belt. Keep going to the gym and keep doing my leg weights and different type of, you know, functional stuff. And then I've been working with a personal trainer as well, trying to just keep myself sharp. But that's all you can do. You know, you're right. You can never replicate that match fitness and that fitness of actually having pre-season games under your belt, essentially. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to do that this year. Whereas last year, I was actually training with Burton before I signed for them. So I did have a couple of friendlies under my belt before I signed for them. But that's out of my control, really. You know, all I can control is making sure that I'm doing everything I can with what I've got, really. And I'm continuing to do that, really. Again, it's frustrating. I'd love to be here now telling you that I'm fully fit, raring to go, and I've had, you know, five or six pre-season friendlies under my belt, but unfortunately that's not the situation. But I'm doing my best, and that's all I can do, and I'm sure once the opportunity does arrive, you know, I'll get get myself up to sharpness pretty quickly.
Is it also a bit of a double-edged sword? Because I know, having spoke to a lot of former Derby players and things like that, that football is a relentless grind, right? Essentially, you have, let's say, a couple of weeks of vacation, but that's kind of a working vacation because you're still doing your fitness work and things like that. Even if you're off in sunny Spain or in America or wherever, you're still doing runs, you're still doing something active every day. Is it a little bit refreshing on the counterpoint to it being frustrating, because you're able to relax, you're able to spend time with your family, and yeah, you're still doing the fitness stuff, but you can explore Sam Whittle the person a little bit more, vice Sam Whittle the football player, and discover new hobbies and just maybe enjoy a different bit of a lifestyle? Is there also like that also counterpoint to that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's a good point. You know, we as footballers, you're also humans, and you've also got, you know, like you say, important family members that are supporting you for 11 months of a year during the season. So it is, of course, it's important to spend as much time with them and quality time as well. But like you said, I mean, I had a week's holiday in Croatia and I was still doing a run there. But no, I mean, it's been great for my golf. My handicap's come down because I've played a hell of a lot of golf, especially on weekends, because I'm not playing, I've not got a game. So that's been great. But yeah, you just try and make the best of the situation, really. And that is, like I say, spend as much time with family and just keep doing things that are going to keep you sane. Like I say, that's golf for me. That's kind of my little escape. But yeah, it's, like you say, double-edged sword. But that only lasts so long, you know. You get to a stage where, because you miss that competitive edge, you know, you're so used to being, having to be competitive from, you know, every single day. Even on your days off, you still have to remain competitive by doing everything right for recovery for the next match, which is normally three, four days away. So you miss that, and you miss having that routine of just constantly doing the best thing, best you can for your job. And I think I've got to that stage. I've got to that stage where I've had a really good time with my family. But yeah, I think it's just, I'm ready to go back now. I'm ready to get back to doing what I've done best for most of my life.
And Sam, I'm never going to test you on your golf handicap, because there's two types of golf I do. That's mini golf. And the first nine holes of mini golf, I am outstanding. I'm like PGA Tour quality. The back nine, completely the opposite. Like it is just terrible. It is like, I can whiz through the front nine, be like six under, whatever. Back nine, it's like I'll finish like 36 over. I don't know what it is. Whatever mini golf course I go on, it's always the back nine that gets me. And a few weeks ago, I went to a driving range where you can hit balls into different colored like buckets and things like that. And I saw some girl slip off the deck and she fell onto the safety net. And I thought, that's me done. I'm just going to sit here and eat these nachos. So that's so yeah. I'm not going to test you on the golf thing, but I can understand the frustration and the double-edged sword of wanting something and wanting to continue with your career and your livelihood. But at the same time, it could kind of also get old doing the flip side, even though you're enjoying it and whatever, you still want to be going and doing your vocation.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah. And like I say, I think the best thing you can do is just try to keep yourself sane and just keep, you know, protecting yourself mentally, not just physically, and by doing the best thing you can, but you've got to keep that brain in a positive mindset as well.
Do you watch football when you're not playing? Is it something that, because I know some footballers want to break from football, they don't watch it, they don't really read anything into it, or are you still keen on like watching it and still like mentally thinking about games as they're going on and thinking about it from a player's perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm a student of the game, essentially. I do enjoy watching footballers. More so now the Premier League started, because obviously the quality is just a little bit better in the Premier League. I'm a big Arsenal fan to go alongside that, so I'll be watching them tonight against Crystal Palace, which should be good. But yeah, you still try to keep up with everything, you know. Like, I think the love for the game, you don't just lose that when you've not got a contract or if you're not involved at the moment. So I've still got the kind of passion for it. I still enjoy watching it. I'm not really one to look into too much of the tactical side of things. It's more just watching it for the enjoyment of sport for me. as just a lover of the game.
So, harking your mind back to the summer of 2017, Gary Rowett is the Derby County manager. Derby had kind of undergone a shift where they had were trying to bring in some more experienced players. They had several successful, unsuccessful playoff runs, but success because they had been in the playoffs. Hadn't quite managed to do it. Gary kind of took over, wanted to change style, wanted to bring in some experienced heads. And Sam Whittle arrives on deadline day to Derby. What's it like? Tell me about how that move kind of came about. Was it like on deadline day? Did it come about a couple of weeks before? Did you know of the interest? Like, how does that kind of move happen?
It was very, very much deadline day, to be honest. I actually trained in the morning with Sheffield Wednesday. It wasn't until I actually got into the dressing room after training and finished, and I checked my phone saying that the option to go to Derby was there. And initially it was scheduled to be a permanent move. But for one reason or another, he couldn't. I think there wasn't enough time to kind of get that kind of sorted. So it ended up being a loan swap, and I think I got signed, got my medical finished, and everything done. I think, excuse me, about 10 minutes before the deadline. So it was a really long day. I trained, like I said, trained in Sheffield. I drove home where I was living in Leeds at the time, then drove from Leeds down to Derby and had my medical. Got everything signed, and luckily mine went through on that day because I don't know if you can remember, but there was a certain player that thought he'd signed, and for some reason it didn't go through, and that collapsed. But yeah, I remember it well. It was an exciting day to say the least. But yeah, good memories.
The infamous Kiftenbeld fax machine, and somehow it got jammed up. I still to this day do not know how a fax machine works. It's just shocking to me. It has like a phone, and then it takes stuff, and then it punches. I just don't. I like scanners. I can figure it out and stuff like that, but faxes, I've just never been able to wrap my head around that. But that's just, you know, it's just shocking. I always have this perception, Sam, on deadline day that when someone is coming late in the window, that everybody is just running around like mad people, waving their hands about, throwing papers everywhere. And then like you're in a car, it's doing like 90 on the M1 to try to get to Derby. And the doctor's like rushing through the medical. Is there a sense of that rush as a player or from the people that you came in contact with on that day? Or are they all very calm because it's like, yeah, we've done this before. We have more than enough time.
A bit of both, really. I mean, for me, that's how it felt because it was my first time having any form of kind of transfer as such on deadline day. I was actually, I hadn't, it had all been kind of agreed, but there was still negotiations with Sheffield Wednesday and Derby going through. So I was actually parked outside the training ground for about 3 hours, just sitting in my car before I was allowed to enter the training ground and being given permission. And as you can imagine, for 3 hours, I was, I was as the minutes were ticking by, I was getting more nerves, hoping that it had just go through. And thankfully, it did go through in the end. But yeah, I think the people who are working at the football clubs, like you say, they've done this, you know, hundreds of times before. They're experienced in what they're doing, so there's not that kind of chaotic feeling. Well, there wasn't for what I experienced, but yeah, you do hear some horror stories of deadline day moves. But thankfully, mine went through well.
What was the convincing factor to join Derby other than obviously playing time and being part of that squad? I mean, what did Gary Rowett say to you, and what were your first impressions of the Derby squad when you met up with him the day after?
Well, I mean, it was I'd worked with Gary before. I'd worked with him. He was the assistant manager at Burton when I had a loan move from Wolves when I was a teenager. So I kind of knew him pretty well anyway, having worked with him and some of the other staff that I'd worked with as well, like Kevin Paul and Sailor. So I think as soon as I heard, I mean, like you only had to look at the kind of names in the squad, the experience that they had, not just championship experience, the Premier League experience with, you know, Dave Nugent, Tom Huddleston, you know, just to name a few that had played hundreds of games in the Premier League. And it was just part of the squad that I wanted to be a part of, really. And as soon as I'd kind of had that kind of information that the option was there, I was like, yeah, let's do it. The club, as you say, had been in the playoffs for the last few years, and I thought it would be great to be part of a promotion winning side that had great chance as well with the squad that was there. So, you know, I mean, first impressions were brilliant. All the lads when I went in were fantastic with me, and it was a really tight-knit group. Majority of the lads lived close together as well, so it was like, you know, they socialised all together as well, and it just, everyone got on really well. There was no kind of bad egos bad eggs or big egos. There was nothing of that sort, even though, you know, plenty of the lads had amazing careers leading up to that period. So it was just a pleasure, really, from day one. I just felt welcome, felt valued, and I just enjoyed it from the first day till the last.
Did you feel like, with that kind of welcome and that kind of feel, that you knew you were kind of going to be in a good place at Derby? Because oftentimes it can feel like a lone players come in and they just kind of, you know what I mean? They're there for a short amount of time. They're not, you know, on a long contract. So sometimes you get stories where lone players show up just because it's for the money or just because they wanted to get games or something like that. Did you feel with that welcome and things like that, that you're like, it helped you build a little bit more of a bond with Derby early on?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, even from kind of, you know, from the first couple of games that I played, it was, you know, the fans had made me feel so welcome from the off. I mean, I was lucky to score on my second appearance, the equaliser against Birmingham. And that obviously helped me to kind of earn the fans' kind of respect at the same time as well. So it just went really well from the off, to be honest. And it always felt like I was part of it, rather as a signed player rather than a lone player. I don't know if that was because the intention was for me originally to join on a permanent, or that was just the feeling that the club and the fans gave me. But no, like, it never felt like that. It always felt as if, as soon as I kind of joined that squad, that I was part of it, and I was an important part of it as well. I mean, that's a massive thing for any footballer, is that you don't want to be feeling like a spare part, essentially. You want to be feeling valued. You want to feel as if you're making a difference to the team. And that's certainly what I had from not just the teammates and the staff, but from all the fans as well.
What was it like for you at Pride Park for the first time when you walk out? Because they always talk about Derby, and I'm sure you'd played at Pride Park before in your career, but as a home player to come through and to kind of have that support, what was it like to step out there for the first time and experience that atmosphere as a home player?
Yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, I was very lucky because my debut was in a 5-0 win. so obviously that was a great start. I think I came on and we were already like 4-0 up, I think, as well. So it was like, it was quite a nice welcome. Nice easy welcome as such, really, because the game was kind of finished, so I could go on and just enjoy myself. But no, it was great. I mean, the stadium was excellent. I'd been as a fan as well, which was good. I'd witnessed games there myself, being from Wolverhampton originally. And being an Arsenal fan, it was great because you could always go to the Villas, the Derbies to actually watch Arsenal play. So I'd been lucky enough to do that as well. So I knew the stadium pretty well, and I was really looking forward to it from, you know, as soon as I joined. And yeah, it was a good debut, really, with the win.
Yeah, 5-0 doesn't come around very often in Derby County's history, nor certainly in the recent history does that happen for Derby. Sam, 17 appearances for Derby, 6 goals. And I was looking at some of the highlights of your goals in preparation for this. And I think out of the 6, I think 4 of them were from a combined yardage of maybe 12 yards. And then you had 1 from the penalty spot and then 1 absolute corker that flew in from like 25 yards, upper 90. That was incredible. What are your kind of memories playing in that team and with those kind of goals?
Yeah, it was great. You know, I think that's kind of what I think I'd been brought in to be, really, is to be that kind of poacher in the 6-yard box, that when the ball came in into the box, there'd be somebody there to kind of tap that in. And I, like you say, I did that quite a few times, which was good. And there were, I think the best part about the goals that I did score is that they were important. I mean, the two away at Elland Road to win the game, two away at Ipswich to win that game, the winner at not away at Norwich as well. So, you know, equaliser against Blues. I mean, they all actually meant something. They weren't just kind of goals that, you know, the fifth goal in a 5-0 win as such. They were actually important goals. And I think that was, you know, it was a real confidence booster for me and gave me a lot of like special memories. I mean, the night at Elland Road for me, living in Leeds at the time, was, you know, one of my favourite ever games that I've ever played in. So, you know, it was brilliant to be part of that squad. And like I said earlier, to be a valued member of that squad, you know, was a really good, really good year.
After the brace against Leeds and living there at the time, did your girlfriend have to go out and do the shopping for a while? Or were you kind of like, I can't really go out here because they're going to see me get in the post and I might get egged or something?
Yeah, it's funny, actually. If you look back at the goal of the game, when I did score, I covered my face like that. And it was just a joke that I had with my neighbour that if I scored, I couldn't show my face around the city for a while. But no, it was good. You know, it was crazy because I had a lot of people that I knew in the crowd that were supporting Leeds on the night. And then obviously after that, I had quite a lot of messages from those people. They were also happy for me, but obviously a little bit disappointed with how the night had gone as well. So, but no, that night was brilliant. It was a really good occasion, great atmosphere, and it was a great win in the end as well.
And I think you when you said it there, you know, a lot of the goals that you score are very important. It kind of harkens my mind back to like Divock Origi at Liverpool. You know, Divock Origi didn't score buckets of goals for Liverpool, but he scored very important goals for Liverpool, which is why when he left, he was like, you know, this cult hero, because he had scored in the comeback against Barcelona. He had scored against Everton a couple of times, and like he always scored big goals. And I think, you know, yeah, it's great. You know, you want to score goals, but like you say, if you score the fifth in a 5-0 win, it's kind of like, you know, I scored a goal. That's great. But, you know, I think, and this leads me into my next question, Sam, would you rather score important goals or just buckets of consolation goals? I mean, obviously, buckets of consolation goals mean other things because they look at your goal score record, like, look at this guy. This guy can get goals. And that leads to other riches and different moves and things like that. But,
yeah,
you know, is it better to score important goals or kind of meaningless goals, but more meaningless goals?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think, and any striker will always say that take the bucket loads of goals, you know. That, I mean, you only have to look at what Erling Haaland's doing at the moment. You know, he's just insane with the amount of goals he's scoring. And as a striker, that's what you want to do. You just want to score as many goals as possible. But the feeling is different, you know, when you, like you just said, like scoring the fifth in a 5-0 win, the feeling of scoring a winning goal in the last couple of minutes, that is different, you know. It triggers something else in your brain. It's the best feeling in football, and I'd be surprised if anyone disagreed with that. You know, to score a winning goal in the last minute, I've been lucky enough to do it quite a few times, and like I said, I did it a couple of times at Derby as well. And yeah, there's no feeling like it. So trying to replicate that is very hard.
Talk me through the night against Brentford, because that was a different kind of night for you. And you know, I remember you were running towards the far touchline as the camera away from the benches, right? Towards, I believe, the West Stand. And it was kind of innocuous and you fell over and whatnot. Walk me through that night, because if memory serves, that was the night that you suffered your ACL tear and yet you continued to play on. Walk me through how it felt and how you were able to continue.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, looking back, it's quite a sad day. I mean, at the time, I don't think I realised the kind of velocity of what I'd done. I think it was, like, as you just said, it was very innocuous. So I was pressing the fullback and I went to plant one way and go the other, and my knee just gave way, and it did give me a sharp pain. You know, I did think, oh God, this is sore, I've done something. But I just don't think I've realised what I'd actually happened. And I think because I'd tore my ACL on the other side before, and when I did it that side, I was like in excruciating pain, knew I'd done it straight away, had gas and air on the pitch. Because this one didn't feel as bad as that one, I think I thought, all right, okay, I've probably twisted my knee. Let's just get up, stand up, have a like run up and down the touchline, see how it feels. And I'd spoken to the physio at the time, it was Robin, and I'd said, like, I feel all right, I can go back on. And I think we were 2-0 up at the time, and I'd come on as a sub, and I was desperate to score. I was just desperate to get a goal. So I was like, yeah, I'm fine, I'll go back on. Not really thinking, you know, about what I'd done or if there was a potential to make it any worse. So, carried on, won the penalty as well for the last goal, for Vidra's goal. And it just maybe just adrenaline. I don't really have an explanation for it. I think maybe adrenaline got me through, or that determination to try and get up a score sheet just kind of pulled me through. But even after the game, you know, my knee felt sore, but it just felt okay, really. I went out for dinner that night. The next day on the Sunday, I came in for a bit of a treatment, but I was still walking around okay. And then when I had a scan on the Monday, and when I got the news, I was in disbelief, really. I genuinely thought the scan was wrong. I thought, it's impossible. Like, I'm walking around, I feel fine. How can it be that I've torn my ACL? But then I saw the specialist 3 days later and had the operation that night, and it was as quick as that, really. And it was really disappointing, heartbreaking at the time, really, because I think we were second in the table at the time. I felt as if I was playing well, felt fit, felt as if I was making an impact on every game that I was involved in. And to kind of be told that, you know, that's your season over, it was disappointing. And so I had to kind of just shift my focus to try and say, well, I'm obviously not going to be able to help the lads on the pitch, but how can I kind of help the lads for the rest of the season? Hopefully get promoted and be a part of a promotion winning side. It obviously wasn't meant to be, but I'd like to think that I did everything I could after the injury and off the pitch to try and help the other boys and the staff.
How do you pick yourself up mentally after an injury like that? Obviously, you had done your ACL before. You kind of knew the timeline. You knew kind of a little bit of the rehab that needed to go on, and kind of the hacks that you needed to meet month after month after month to make sure that you were on the thing. But, you know, you're playing well. You feel like you have an impact. And like you said there, you feel extremely fit. And then to have this kind of cruel blow happen, how do you mentally prepare yourself to sit there and go, okay, well, the season's just completely gone pear-shaped for me in a way that I didn't want to do? I'm assuming that it wasn't the best mental space to be in, because it's your livelihood that you're not able to do the game that you love. There's a lot of uncertainty with contracts and coming back and things like that, especially after a second ACL. How did you mentally prepare yourself for the long road ahead?
I think the it's tough. I mean, you need a few days. I think the big thing is having a few days to kind of just absorb what's happened, and kind of accept that it is what it is. There's no going back now, you know, like, it's happened. You can't do anything about it. And so you just have to think, right, what's the best way about I can do to help my recovery, help the rest, help my teammates, like I've just said. And then that's where you go from there. You start thinking, well, okay, I'm not going to be playing football, but I've got to be strong, and I've got to give my body every kind of possible chance of recovering well. And that's what I did. I mean, I was really lucky. I think the hardest part of it was the uncertainty of surrounding whether I'd be at Derby or I'd be going back to Sheffield Wednesday, because kind of my like knowledge prior to that moment was that I was going to be joining the club permanently. And then that happened, so it threw that up in the air, obviously. And then there was talk about where I was going to do my rehab, whether I was going to do it at Derby or Sheffield Wednesday. And Derby were fantastic. They said, no, you're on loan here until the end of the season. We'll do your rehab until your loan's up. And that, you know, that meant a lot to me, and it just kind of showed the class of the club, because I think so many other football clubs there would have just been like, look, you're a loan player, you can go back to your to your parent club, but like the staff from the manager and upwards, and all the physio staff were like, no, no, you're part of this team. You stay here. You can stay here. And that was brilliant. And all I wanted to do then was kind of repay that kind of faith that the club had put in me and work as hard as I could. So from that moment in, it was just about kind of recovery then, get hard work, trying to make sure that I come back stronger than before. And thankfully, the guys at Derby that were there at the time did a great job, and I've had no problems since, touch wood, with that knee.
Do you think what came down to the situation, Sam? What I wanted to ask you was, you know, you were a lone player in kind of your mind. You were kind of maybe a permanent Derby player because that's what you had kind of, you know what I mean, on deadline day, kind of been told that they wanted you permanently. You came in on a loan. And I'm assuming that your assumption was they were going to continue your loan spell permanently. Do you think it was the knee injury that was the deciding factor between signing for Derby permanently or not? Or was it also coupled with the fact that Gary Rowett did leave Derby after the end of the season? Or was it a bit of both? What do you think was the main factor there?
Yeah, I think as you just touched on it there, I think it was a bit of both, yeah. I mean, I know that I've spoken to Gary, you know, quite a few times leading up to that. He knew what I wanted to do and I knew what he wanted to do as well. So, you know, we were clear on kind of what the intentions were moving forward. But football has a funny way of changing in a heartbeat, you know. And I'd kind of, it was during, how I found out really was it was during the summer, and I'd spoken to Gary during the season saying that he wanted to keep me on. But then when I was actually away on holiday and found out that Gary had gone to Stoke, and then from there, you obviously don't know what's going to happen because the new manager came in. It was Frank Lampard at the time. And he wanted to go down a different direction, which, you know, is understandable. It is quite difficult coming in as a new manager and there being a situation like mine where, you know, I'd been kind of told certain things. And then he probably wants to do something differently because, as you say, there is no guarantee with coming back from ACLs that you're going to be able to get back to that same level of sharpness. So he wanted to go down a different route, and that was how it worked out. So I ended up going back to Sheffield Wednesday. And at the time, I mean, I was disappointed, to be honest. I wanted to join the club permanently. I loved my time there. I thought it was fantastic people, fantastic squad. And I'd got on really well with the fans, so it was disappointing to leave at the time. But I think that just shows what kind of football is like at times. It's not as straightforward as it can come across. There are a lot of complexities that can come with a game and a lot of variables that can change things in the space of a split second. And I think that just shines a good light as an example of that.
Was that a conversation that you had? When your loan was up, was the conversation with Frank Lampard, or was that just communicated to by other members of the club that, hey, Sam, look, they want to go in a different direction? Or was that, you know, because I'm not in the game, so I don't know. Like, when a new manager comes in, does he get a list and say, hey, this guy, Sam Winnell, was on loan? And he's like, I don't know. I'll call him and have a conversation or whatever. Or was that communicated to you from the chief executive or the boardroom level?
I was lucky enough to speak to him, yeah. I mean, I spoke because it was during the summer, wasn't it? It was during the off season. But I was doing my rehab with the physios in the gym. So I didn't really have much time off during that season. So honestly, you know, when Frank did come in, I was lucky enough to meet him and have a good chat with him. But how it came out, he spoke to my agent and just said, like, look, I want to go in a different direction, and was really honest about it. And I think that's all you can ask for as a footballer, is just ask for that honesty and that level of, like, you know, what's going on. Because I was in that kind of limbo of not knowing what was going to happen, you just want a little bit of clarity, really. And thankfully, he was really honest. You know, he said very kind words about, you know, my time at Derby, what he'd seen and what he'd heard from other people was very positive, but he just wanted to go in a different route, and you kind of have to respect that as a player. That was his decision, and he was the manager of the football club, so you just have to kind of respect that and move on.
And I bet it makes it easier when they're honest about it rather than trying to find a way to let you down easy, quote unquote. You know what I mean? Instead of just being like, look, I'm going in a different direction. You're not in the plans. It's probably best you play elsewhere rather than, well, I could keep you around, but then there's this. And then you kind of get the idea that you're not in the plans without them telling you so much. It must make it a lot easier at Derby or any club when the manager just comes out and be like, look, I'm just going to be mano a mano here to you. It's just not going to happen here for you. You probably, for the best of your career, should move to another club or something.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's like I said earlier, that's all you can ask for from a manager is honesty. You know, I mean, you can always, football's a game of opinions, essentially. You're not going to be for everybody. There's going to be some people that think you're, you know, a starting striker, number nine, and there's going to be some people that will view you as, you know, a non-squad player. So, I mean, like, you have to kind of understand that that is the industry, and all you can ask for in that is that the person that's in charge of you at the time is honest with you. And thankfully, Frank was, you know, I appreciated that at the time. And I think I appreciate it more looking back now because I have experienced that, the other side of that, where managers aren't honest. You know, they promise you the world and then don't deliver. I've experienced that as well. So, I mean, looking back, like you said, all you can ask for is honesty, and thankfully it was with me. It wasn't what I wanted to hear, but sometimes that's just the way it goes.
And without getting into the inner sanctimonium of the dressing room, and not to call anybody out here or whatnot, but I've got to ask you this, Sam. Are there any stories that you could share with me about your time in the dressing room, about pranks that happened or banter that happened, that you'd be willing to share about something that we might not necessarily, not trying to make front page news here on The Sun, but, you know, a funny moment or anything like that that happened that stands out at your time?
There was many. I must be honest. It was a brilliant year. Some brilliant stories, some more explicit than others, and that I won't be able to share. But there was one which was really good. We went to Dubai on a pre-season. No, it wasn't pre-season. Sorry, on a mid-season like training camp. I think we'd been knocked at the FA Cup by Man United, and so we had a week. We had a week where we didn't have a fixture, so we went to Dubai on like a mid-season training camp, and Gary, the gaffer at the time, had kind of given us a day off where we could go, we could even play golf, or we could kind of go to the beach, but kind of been, you know, strict with us, saying like there was no drinking, and obviously as soon as the manager says that, there's going to be certain amount of lads that just say, "No, I'm going out drinking." So there was about 12 or 13 of us that all snuck out of the hotel complex and just went out for a few beers. We'd been given strict curfew to be back at 8 o'clock, and I think we all stumbled in about 7:59. And yeah, it was a funny dinner that we had all together at that time. Dinner was at 8 o'clock, and I think it was looking around, and there's a lot of players that were trying to hide the fact they'd had a couple of beers. And that was good fun, to be fair. That was a good story for the season.
And even though it was against all rules, and we don't condone rule breaking, you know, it must be one of those things that it's like the lads are doing it, and it's more for a team experience as well. You know, it's a bit of bonding, because now I've got, me and you have had a shared experience. We've kind of done this somewhat naughty thing on the training camp, against kind of, you know, the head teacher's wishes, and we've able to get back in under the curfew. And I guess it builds a little bit of camaraderie in the squad. So I guess sometimes if you don't want to do it, you kind of have to do it in order to build that kind of camaraderie with your squad, don't you?
That's exactly what it was. Yeah, exactly what it was. You know, we kind of, we used it as a, well, maybe the excuse was a team bonding exercise. But it turned out to be a great day, you know, like we all had such a good time, and even though we probably broke the rules, and, you know, we didn't cause no harm, didn't hurt anybody. So, you know, we all come back standing just about. So it was great, you know, and like you get to know people away from the actual football pitch, which is always nice, and people can, it gives certain people a chance to come out of the shells as well, which was great. So, you know, it was a great day. It was a really good trip, actually. Everything about that trip was really good. So yeah, it was a good day. So I had a good time anyway.
Well, Sam, we've spent the best part of 45 minutes to an hour discussing your time at Derby, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I've thoroughly enjoyed meeting you and hearing about some of your experiences, but I don't want to take up all of your evening because I know you've got some football to watch this evening. As do I, just don't tell my boss. And I want to thank you for your time, Sam Whittle, Derby County lone Colt hero. Thank you, Sam, for joining me on the podcast.
No, my pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Rams Review podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to get in touch, we're on Twitter at Rams Review 1. Our Facebook is Rams Review Podcast. Or you can drop us an email, ramsreview@hotmail.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, up the Rams.